Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty. It is almost 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 385 in the series. It's May 11th, and to my right is the ultra-vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. What's going on?
How are you, Dimply?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah? Yeah. I'm good.
All good.
Yeah, and you know what?
I know a lot of things. I don't know what you're getting at this one.
We have, with Mother's Day being tomorrow.
Well, it's like in 51 minutes.
This is true, but tomorrow is tomorrow.
Tomorrow is tomorrow.
Tomorrow
today
is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
We have one Mother's Day show on this edition. It's the Harold Perry Show, which is the second episode. But we're going to start things off with Escape from 1947. Then it's the Harold Perry Show. We've never aired one of these. You're going to hear what Hal Perry sounded like when he left the Gildersleeve Show to appear in his own produced show called the Harold Perry Show. And then it's Straight Arrow, Good Western, all coming your way here on the WGN Radio Theater till 2 o'clock in the morning. Sound good?
Yep, and we have a picture of Harold Perry on our Facebook page, so you can check that out with the fun facts.
All right. Well, all of this begins right after these words. All right, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
You're going to have to do all the talking on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. You know why?
I have no problem with that, Carl.
But you know why?
Because
my mouth is going to be filled with chocolate cake.
Oh, that's okay, too.
Because one of our most amazing listeners sent over a chocolate cake that is to die for.
It is that. It is just that. It is rich and delicious, and we're going to be eating that during the show.
People
ask us, what do we do during the radio shows? We're going to be eating chocolate cake. I'm going to post a picture of that on Facebook because it's too beautiful not to post, so we'll post a picture of our beautiful cake.
You know where it's going to be even more beautiful? In my stomach. Yeah. And everybody
here. I don't know if that's actually going to be beautiful, but.
And everybody here is having a piece. Yeah. Roe had a piece. Shanta had a piece. Dan had a piece. We offered everybody here a piece of cake.
David.
So
and
nice.
Roger.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, thank you, thank you for that cake. We have a text in line, 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. Please text us. We'll be here to 2 o'clock in the morning. And we do have a Mother's Day show tomorrow as well, Life of Riley. Good Mother's Day program. But right now it's Escape. We're going to go back to November 12th, 1947. This is The Young Man with the Cream Tarts, and it stars Paul Frees. Part one now of Escape.
Started your Christmas shopping yet? Worried about where the money's coming from? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape.
You were seated around a green felt table with a dozen desperate men, waiting for the turn of a card. If it's the ace of spades, you will be next. And you desperately desire the impossible. Escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to London of the last century. A London of gas lights and hansom cabs. A London where a gentleman still valued his word of honor above his life. A London of which one terrifying incident is recorded by Robert Louis Stevenson in his unforgettable story, The Young Man with the Cream Tarts.
Oh,
Bored?
Or rather.
City seems to offer little amusement tonight.
Well, bottoms up. Let's be on our way.
Righto. Your health.
And yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, please have a free card. It's absolutely free. My compliments. Madam, will you honor me? Say what you want.
Well, now, what's this?
A young man with a tray of cream tarts. He's giving them away.
Perhaps one of the turns on the bill.
Perhaps. Shall we go?
Yes, let's.
I pray you accept this confection, for if you do not, I'm bound to eat it myself.
You must be crazy.
I was never more sane. You refuse?
I do.
And there's nothing for it but my 27th tart since 5 o'clock. Now there are but two left. You, sir.
Yes?
Will you so far honor an entire stranger? Truly excellent pastry. I should know I've eaten enough of him.
It is not the nature of a gift that is important, but the spirit in which it is offered.
The spirit, sir, is one of mockery.
Mockery? And whom do you mock?
Myself. However, my purpose at the moment is not confession, but rather distribution of these cream tarts. Won't you and your friend dispose of the last of them?
Yes. Yes, on one condition. If my friend and I eat your last two cakes, we shall expect you to join us at supper.
Supper? It's a horrible thought. I've already eaten 24 of these pastries.
Very well, then we shall omit supper and become better acquainted over a bottle of wine.
I'm uncertain whether my repugnance for these two remaining tarts or the attraction of your invitation compels me, but I accept.
Excellent. Then let us finish off your pastry and seek a more quiet place.
How about Michelle's in Soho?
Splendid. Shall we go?
An excellent restaurant, excellent wine, and two excellent friends. I drink to your health.
And we drink to yours. I'm sure you will understand my curiosity,
but you are curious.
Naturally. Although I suspect that your story is probably a silly one.
Oh, indeed.
You may rest assured that we are two of the silliest men in England. My name is Godall, Theophilus Godall, and my friend here is Major Alfred Hammersmith.
I like you, Mr. Godall. And you, Major Hammersmith, though I suspect those are not your right names.
It is of no importance.
Exactly, nor is my name, so I will not divulge it. Although I see no reason why I should deny you my story, it's brief and foolish.
Pray tell us, then.
It's an oft-told tale. A modest fortune which I squandered in the usual ways at cards, the horse races in Paris. Then 2 months ago, I met a young lady exactly suited to my taste in mind and body. My heart melted. I was in love too late. Yesterday, my solicitor warned me that I had but £100 left in the world. 40 of these I used last night for a special purpose, and I have agreeably spent the day disposing of the remaining £60 in as foolish a manner as I could devise.
And the future?
The future has been taken care of by the £40.
Is it not odd that we three should have met by the merest accident in so large a wilderness as London, and be so nearly in the same condition?
Yes. Major Hammersmith, I was thinking the very same thing.
What's this? Are you two also ruined? Is this bottle of excellent wine the last folly, like my cream tarts?
Very nearly so. I'm perhaps a week behind you. I still have a few banknotes in my wallet, however. Here now, this bill will take care of the bottle of wine, and the others I throw into the fire.
Oh, no. You shouldn't have burned all of them. You should have kept £40.
£40? Why?
Why not 50 or 70? For to my certain knowledge, there were more than 100 in his wallet.
It was only just £40 he needed. But without them, there is no admission. The rule is strict.
What do you mean? I have not yet completely emptied my pocketbook.
You are not fooling me. You are indeed ruined men like me.
Oh, indeed.
Could you muster £80 between you?
Well, let me look in my wallet. Yes, 80 and a little over.
Then you are indeed most fortunate. £40 each is the initiation fee of the Suicide Club.
The Suicide Club? What the devil is that?
The Suicide Club is death's private door. It's the ultimate convenience in our modern world. It exists for unfortunates like us. Those to whom the painful agony of corrosive poison is distasteful. Or those whose courage fails them when the cold muzzle chills the forehead. For those whose fear of drowning is greater than their compulsion to die. For these sensitive misfits, the Suicide Club arranges every detail. If you're truly tired of life, I will introduce you tonight to a meeting, and I can assure you that within the week you will be relieved of the burden of living. What do you say? It's more serious than a cream tart, and I suspect more palatable.
More serious, certainly. So I wonder if you would give Mr. Godall and me 5 minutes alone to discuss it.
Certainly. I shall wait outside.
Your Highness, this adventure must stop here.
Nonsense, Colonel Geraldine. I propose to see this through.
See it through to what? Death? You forget your obligations, not only to yourself, but to your country. Prince Florizel of Bohemia cannot risk...
Tonight I am plain Mr. Godard, and so I propose to remain. And please remember, Colonel Geraldine, under no circumstances are you to betray my incognito.
But, Your Highness...
We have survived graver adventures than this one promises to be. And now, Colonel Geraldine, let us pay our bill and accompany our young wastrel to death's private door.
Well, here you are, Governor. Box court.
Gentlemen, we have arrived.
Here you are, cabbie. Keep the change.
Oh, thank you, sir. Hey, come on.
Well, Mr. Godard, Major Hammersmith, there is still time to change your minds.
Lead on, sir. My mind's made up.
And mine.
Follow me, then.
As dark as a tomb.
An apt and concise simile.
Here we are, gentlemen, at death's private door. Shall we enter?
Pray, let's.
May hang your things in here. Should be good enough to wait, I shall call the president.
Of all our follies, this is the wildest and most dangerous.
I'm beginning to believe you're right.
Let me beseech your highness
not... Do not forget you are my aide-de-camp.
Not your father. Yet I am responsible to the king for your well-being.
Colonel Geraldine, you're not afraid.
Certainly not for myself, but for your highness.
Shh, quiet.
The president will see you in his office. I have vouched for you, but you must give him honest answers. The indiscretion of a single member might lead to the dispersion of the society forever. He can't afford to take that risk. Follow me. In here. He's waiting for you.
Good evening. I am told that you wish to speak to me.
We have a desire, sir, to join the suicide club.
Sir, you've made a mistake. This is a private house, and you must leave it instantly.
We have come here upon the invitation of a friend of yours. He's already told you of our desires. And believe me, sir, when one has come this far along the path, one is not likely to be turned away and certainly will tolerate little rudeness. Permit me to assure you, either you will oblige us in the matter, or you'll regret ever having admitted us to the premises.
Well, now, that's more like it. This is no place for men not yet desperate. I believe you, sir. But what of your friend?
My reasons are even more cogent than Mr. Godall's. I was cashiered out of my regiment last week.
Why?
Cheating at cards.
I see. And you, sir, what is your reason for being tired of life?
Unadulterated laziness.
Don't trifle with me, sir. You must have a better reason than that.
I have no more money, and I'm much too lazy to come by any.
If I did not have a great deal of experience in these matters, I would turn you down. But I have learned that the most frivolous excuses for a suicide often cover a deep and lifelong desire for self-destruction.
Thank you for your understanding, sir.
Very well. To business. I shall read you the oath of membership to which you will each subscribe. I swear to obey without question the instructions of the president of this association or any of his appointed deputies. Realizing that desirable death could scarcely be a penalty for violating this oath, I am aware that any violation will be met at the discretion of the president by those means deemed suitable by him. Namely, excommunication from the church, loss of whatever honor still attaches to my name, and or, when necessary, violent reprisals against my bereaved family. In full knowledge of the sacredness of this oath, I subscribe my name. Well, gentlemen,
you are in a position to enforce those penalties.
I am.
Hand me the pen.
My friend.
The pen, please. Major Hammersmith.
Thank you.
That will be 40 pounds apiece, please.
Here you are.
Thank you. And now, would you like to join the members in the smoking room?
Indeed, we would.
This way, please. Just make yourself at home. Everyone's quite informal here. If you'll pardon me, I have some other matters to attend to.
Come along, Major. Let's mingle with the company.
Your Highness.
Be quiet.
Oh, there you are. You got in all right, I see.
Naturally.
You'll never regret it.
I'm sure we shan't.
Do you care for a game of billiards or perhaps some whist?
No, not immediately, thank you. I'd like just to wander around and listen to the conversation.
You'll find it most revealing.
You understand. She had always stood in the way of anything I wanted to do. And I don't care if she was my mother. She crossed me one time too often.
You may be sure that I would never have joined this wretched club if I had not read The Origin of the Species by Darwin. I could not bear to be descended from an ape.
Certainly,
too
I
ghastly to bear, you know.
There are some men who cannot abide the restrictions of the monastery. And after the abbot discovered me, there was nothing I could do.
It's incomprehensible to me.
What is?
Why, this talk, this boasting, this self-justification. If a man has made up his mind to kill himself, let him do it like a gentleman. Be done with the matter.
As I told you, there are some of us more frightened of the act than of the result.
There's only one man in this room who does not seem to be in a state of hysteria.
Who is that, Mr. Godard?
Why, the gentleman sitting on the divan.
Oh, yes. Yes, Mr. Malthus. Would you like to meet him?
Yes, please. These others are too obvious.
There's nothing very subtle about Mr. Malthus. He looks like death himself, wearing thick eyeglasses.
Let us discover for ourselves the reason for his relaxation.
Mr. Malthus.
Eh?
I should like to present two new members, Mr. Godall and Major Hammersmith.
How do you do, gentlemen?
How do you do, Mr.
Malthus? Pleasure, sir.
Won't you sit down?
Well,
newcomers. Newcomers. I envy you the novelty of your first visit. You will learn to relish it if you are spared. Why, my dear sir, this club, gentlemen, is the temple of intoxication. If my health would permit it, you may be sure I would be here more often. For this is my last dissipation. Believe me, sir, I have tried them all. All the vices. Yes. People trifle with love and ignorantly call it man's most powerful passion. Nonsense, sir, nonsense. Fear. Fear is the strongest passion. It is fear that you must trifle with if you wish to taste the intense joys of living. Envy me, sir. Envy me. I am a coward.
How, sir, is the excitement so artfully prolonged?
Oh, of course, of course. I must tell you how the victim for every evening is selected, as well as the member who is to be death's high priest for the occasion.
Great heavens. You mean they kill each other?
The guilt of suicide is removed in that way.
Then I, or my friend, or you, any of us, might be selected this evening to murder another man?
Exactly.
But how'd they escape the attentions of the law?
Ah, the ingenuity of our president knows no limits. The departures always appear to be accidental.
Why, it's monstrous.
On the contrary, my dear Major, it is godlike.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
But, Mr. Malthus, I am still in the dark as to how the members are selected for the evening's work.
Oh, of course, I forgot to explain. But I see that the others are filing into the card room now, and the play is about to begin. You shall see for yourself. Will you lend me the help of your arm? I'm quite paralyzed, you know.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. This is the moment for which I live. The quintessence of poignancy, the ultimate of passion. Coming here as infrequently as I do, I've savored this bitter taste of fear longer than the others. But my turn will come. Who knows? Perhaps tonight.
But how is it done? Tell us what to expect.
Oh, it's so simple. The president deals from an ordinary deck, playing cards, and each man turns up his card as he receives it. The ace of spades, the card of death. Ace of clubs designates the official of the night.
The murderer.
If you like. Here are three chairs together. Happy, happy young men. You have good eyes and can follow the cards. I only make out the faces.
Is everyone here?
My friend, we still have a fighting chance to escape.
Quiet. Let us play the game.
Attention, gentlemen.
Three of clubs.
All right, that's the first portion of The Young Man with the Cream Tart, starring Paul Frees on Escape. This is the classic story about the Suicide Club, great performance by Paul Frees. His voice is just amazing.
It sure is.
He played Boris Badenoff.
Gorgeous
voice.
Just amazing. Yeah, he did a ton of cartoon work, and he was in a lot of these radio shows. And we'll get back to Escape in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. It's 11:40 here on a Saturday night, just 20 minutes before Mother's Day. We're listening to Escape with the young man with the cream tarts. You know, if you get the ace of spade, it means death, Lisa. Death. So don't get the ace of spade. Let's get back now to Escape.
Jack of hearts.
Ten of diamonds.
King of clubs.
Queen of hearts.
Three of spades.
Nine of clubs.
Six of spades.
Oh, no! No!
It's our young man of the cream tart.
He's drawn the ace of clubs.
I came here to be killed, not to kill. I want to
Gentlemen,
die, not murder.
I must caution the members against such unseemly outbursts.
But I don't want
Since the ace of spades has not yet turned up, I will continue the deal.
Oh, no.
Eight of hearts.
Seven of clubs.
King of diamonds.
Jack of spades.
Ace of spades.
Mr. Malthus.
That concludes the play for the night, gentlemen. Will the member who drew the ace of clubs come to my office for his instructions?
Did your highness ring?
Yes. Good morning, Roderick.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, I shall have my breakfast in bed this morning.
Yes, your highness. And Colonel Geraldine has been waiting for you to awaken.
Oh, very well. Show him in.
Thank you, your highness, sir. Colonel, his highness will see you now.
Good morning, Geraldine. Sleep well?
Not too well.
Did I dream it, or were we initiated into the suicide club last night? Seems like a nightmare.
It was a nightmare, but you didn't dream it. Here, look at this, the morning paper.
Uh-huh. Melancholy accident. This morning, about 2 o'clock, Mr. Bartholomew Malthus of 16 Chepstow Place, Westbourne Grove, on his way home from a party at a friend's house, fell off the upper parapet in Trafalgar Square, fracturing his skull. Death was instantaneous. Mr. Malthus, accompanied by a friend, was engaged in looking for a cab at the time.
If ever a soul went straight to hell, it was that poor paralytic.
Yes, at least he's dead and out of it. But think of our young man of the cream tarts. Last night that lad was as innocent as you and I. This morning he is a murderer.
Thank heavens we're safely out of it.
Are we?
Oh, no. You're not going to return.
I must.
You are infected with a passion of fear just as poor Malthus was.
Perhaps. Whatever it is. Tonight, once more, we take our places at the table of the Suicide Club.
Good evening. Good evening, Mr. Goodall. Back again to try your luck?
Yes, indeed.
And Major Hammersmith?
Good evening.
You are to be congratulated, sir, on the matter of Mr. Malthus. Very neatly handled.
Thank you. But I shall miss poor old Malthy. He was a man I could talk to.
Yes, your bereavement must weigh heavily upon you.
Indeed it does, sir. But then it's all in the game. And now, you will pardon me, we will sit down to play directly.
The fiend. The foul fiend of hell.
Steady, my friend.
Once more, let me plead with you. Leave this evil house before it's too late.
You're very tiresome tonight. Oh, here's our young friend of the cream tarts. Good evening, old chap.
Oh, Mr. Goddard, Major Hammersmith. Oh, how I wish I'd never brought you to this infamous place. Oh, leave. Leave while your hands are still clean.
But our oath. We could not go back upon our oath.
We'll renounce it. Forget everything. Let them do their worst, but leave. Leave before it's too late. If you could have heard the old man scream as I pushed him from the parapet. The crunch of his brittle bones as he thudded to the pavement.
Yes, I perceive the dealing is about to begin. Shall we go in?
Yeah. Mr. Goddard, if you have any kindness in your soul, wish the ace of spades for me tonight. There's nothing left for me but to die.
Attention, gentlemen. Three of hearts.
Queen of spades.
Ace of diamonds.
Three times around and neither black ace has come up.
We are just 13.
This
at the table.
This fourth round. This will tell the tale.
And I am next to last.
Ace of clubs!
Only four more cards.
King of spades!
Oh, pray for me, Mr. Goddard. Pray for me. I have one chance in three. Pray that I get the ace. Six of diamonds!
And now, I have one chance in two.
My friend, don't.
Silence. Ace of spades.
Very well. That concludes tonight's play, gentlemen.
Oh, Mr. Goddard. I'd give a million if I had it for your luck.
I would sell you this card for much less if I could.
Well, Mr. Goddard, my congratulations. I am pleased to have met you, sir, and to have been in the position to do you this trifling service. At least you can't complain of delay.
Yes, yes. And now, before I leave forever, I should like to ask a question. A purely hypothetical question, of course, since I am not a man to go back upon my word.
But you wonder what would happen if you did. If upon the turning of the card you had changed your mind and now wish to live?
Precisely. Suppose my friend Major Hammersmith and I elected to ignore our oath. Suppose we began by tearing this place apart.
You wouldn't even get started. The guests themselves are desperate men, but if they did not stop you, the servants, who are even more desperate, would. You would never leave this house alive.
I see. Well, it was purely an academic question.
Naturally.
Very well, then. What are my instructions?
You will proceed along the Strand in the direction of the city, on the left-hand pavement, until you come upon a black carriage with drawn curtains. In this carriage will be the member who has tonight drawn the ace of clubs.
My executioner.
Your collaborator in suicide. You will enter the carriage, and he will continue your instructions. Please have the kindness to obey him in every detail. The authority of the club is vested in his person for the night. I wish you a pleasant walk.
Thank you. But first I must say farewell to my friend Major Hammersmith.
I regret that is strictly against the rules. No farewells. Too disturbing for the still living members. You will leave through this side door to the workroom.
But I must have...
We won't have any trouble now, will we, Mr. Goddard?
No. No, of course not.
Your coat and hat. Your stick.
Thank you.
Again, Mr. Goddard. A most pleasant walk.
Death's private door. Why didn't I listen to Geraldine before it was too late?
What is this? My instructions are to meet the coach in the Strand.
You'll take this coach right now. Get in with you. All right. Take this one away.
Your Highness will pardon the violation of his person.
Geraldine. Oh, my friend.
It was quite necessary under the circumstances. As soon as you turned up the Ace of Spades, I slipped out of the house to prepare for your escape.
But how did you manage it?
When I realized I could not dissuade you from attending the club tonight, I retained the services of a certain capable and reliable private detective.
But I...
His secrecy has been bought and paid for. His men are now raiding the suicide club. The members will be removed to your townhouse, where it remains for you to pass judgment upon them.
That I will gladly do, and with the utmost dispatch.
What have they brought us here for?
They didn't look like Scotland Yard men to me.
What difference does it make? Perhaps this will be a quicker way out.
Gentlemen!
Why, that's my friend, Major Hammersmith.
His Royal Highness, Prince Florizel of Bohemia.
Bohemia?
Why, that's Mr. Godot. Always thought there was something odd about those two.
Gentlemen, tonight we have removed you from a house of death to a house of life and hope. Those of you who have come to your present condition through lack of fortune will receive employment and remuneration from my treasury. Those who have been driven to this unnatural solution of their problems by the agonies of guilt must find amnesty from a power greater than mine. Power that eternally promises the forgiveness of sins, no matter how grievous. Only one of you is truly evil, and him I shall deal with myself. Where is he? Where is the president of the club?
Colonel Geraldine.
Why, he should be here, Your Highness.
I beg your Highness' pardon.
Who is this man, Geraldine?
The chief of the detectives.
Yes? What is it?
Was you referring to the sallow chap with the sword whiskers and the black suit?
Yes, that's the one. The president of the suicide club. Where is he?
He ain't here.
Why not?
Well, when we broke into the little office down there at the club, we found him sprawled over the desk with a little empty bottle in his hand. He'd committed suicide.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought you The Young Man with the Cream Tarts by Robert Louis Stevenson, adapted for radio by Mr. Robeson, with Paul Frees as Prince Florizel, Bill Johnstone as Colonel Geraldine, and Martin Yarborough as the young man. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
After you've put in a tough day at the office or leaning over a hot stove, when your four walls seem to be closing in on you, next week when you want to get away from it all, we offer you escape.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is The Young Man with the Cream Tarts, starring Paul Frees, from November 12th, 1947. You know, William Conrad was the announcer on this. In the beginning of the show, he said that the story was written by Robert Louis Stevenson.
I heard that.
And then later, this announcer said Robert Louis Stevenson. I believe it is Louis.
I
like
think
Louis
it is.
The Eighth and that type of thing.
I think it is, although I've heard it both ways. So
well, we just heard it both ways.
Exactly. So we've all heard it both ways.
I'm pretty sure it's Robert Louis, but our listeners will know the answer because our listeners are the smartest listeners in all of radio. So you can text us 312-981-7200. But first, we have to play some spots, but we have much more classic radio coming your way. In fact, in our next hour, it's the Harold Perry Show, then Straight Arrow. on this pre-Mother's Day edition of the WGN Radio Theater. Stick around. All right. In our next hour, Harold Perry and then and his show, The Harold Perry Show. It was also called, it had two names. It was called The Harold Perry Show. It was also called Honest Harold. And that was a show that he left Gildersleeve to star in that program. And then we have Straight Arrow after that.
And we're also going to do a Real or Ridiculous at the top of the next hour. And we're going to give away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. So
yes,
stay
we
tuned
are.
For that as well.
And don't forget, folks, you can join the Classic Radio Club for only $1 the first month. Get 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time. And you know, I was thinking about this, Lisa. I not only write liner notes for these shows, but many, if not all, of the shows that we put in the Classic Radio Club, they're not going to be available for air or in any other way that we put them out. They're kind of exclusive for the club. So when you join the club, you get like the best of the best, these shows that are like real gems that I'm finding from the 100,000 shows we have in the collection. So, folks, if you're a classic radio lover, you should look into the Classic Radio Club. You can go to our website, classicradioclub.com, and Lisa gets them digitally sent to her now.
I do. I'm kind of excited. I made the change from the CD to the digital download, and I'm very happy
with that.
She
went to therapy.
And I've changed myself.
She's decided to change her whole outlook on life.
I'm being
reborn. She went
reborn.
From CDs to the digital version.
Yeah, it's the new me.
Yeah, wow.
I'm
I like
feeling
this.
Really good about
I
the
like
new me.
I like the digital too, but Mike likes the CD. So people, you know, whatever you like. If you like CDs, they're available 10 shows on 5 CDs in a collector case each month sent to your door with the liner notes, or you can have them digitally sent to your email. 10 shows, and they are always in tremendous superior sound quality because they're from the master recordings, and you will also get all the liner notes. So all of the information, you could join for the first month, only $1, get 10 shows, at classicradioclub.com. The website has all of the information. All right, we have the Harold Perry Show coming up after the news, then Straight Arrow. And happy Mother's Day, Lisa. It's exactly one minute after Mother's Day.
Yeah, you're the first person
into Mother's
to
Day,
have
I should say.
Wished me happy Mother's Day. Other than our listeners, I had a lot of texts, so I do appreciate that as well.
Did Dan get you something for Mother's Day or your kids or anything like that?
Well, of course, but I haven't received that
you
quite yet.
Oh, you didn't get it yet. You'll get it tomorrow or today, later today.
Later today.
All right, well.
I do like presents.
Yes, I know.
Like a child.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
It's 12:07. Thank you, David. And it's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. It's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. This is your day, and have a great day. Lisa, happy Mother's
Day. I'm hoping so. Thank you. Yeah. Hopefully relaxation is
Gosh,
in store.
Lisa has 4 children.
Yeah.
Wow, didn't you have a hobby at all when you were married?
Yeah, having children.
Yeah. I mean, she might have needed to take up knitting or something.
Knitting,
you know?
Yeah. I'll take that under advisement.
4 kids.
It's a lot.
Like
$1 million
a kid is what it costs nowadays.
Oh, I'm sure we spend more than that.
So let me
you
do
know,
the math.
College alone
4
is
kids, $1 million a kid.
Times 4.
That's $4 million.
That was good. You pulled out your abacus for that
hey,
one.
Hey, you know what? I had some good math teachers.
I know.
At East Leyden High School.
Didn't you have a crush on one of your math teachers?
I did.
I recall.
I had a crush on her, yeah.
I recall.
She's out there. She listens.
I bet.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's listening right now.
Yeah. She was a very nice teacher. I liked her a lot.
Good.
Yeah. She was very pretty.
I bet.
Well, in this hour, we're going to play our game. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes. Our celebrity is Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
Shirley Temple Black.
And I'm not talking about the beverage.
Yeah,
I'm
talking
about the celebrity.
When I have a Shirley Temple, I always have a little liquor in there because you're not supposed to.
Is there such a thing as a Shirley Temple with liquor?
I'm a scofflaw.
Is that a thing?
No.
I didn't think
Shirley Temple is no right. liqueur.
Exactly.
At all.
Nice and clean.
But I don't like to play by the rules.
Oh, yeah. You're a big big deviant, huh? A rebel over here.
I'm a scofflaw. I'm a ne'er-do-well.
I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm going to talk to your mom about that.
All right.
All right. And we're going to be giving away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
Wow, that'll be good.
It will
I
be
ordered
good.
A Lou. We had a Lou Malnati's today, my son and I.
Well,
Lou Malnati's.
I have to tell you that my daughter and I have a thing. Every Monday, we watch The Bachelorette. It's starting again this Monday, and we order Lou Malnati's pizza. It's a tradition.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately,
Here's the great thing. We've been on this radio station 4 years.
Yes.
We've ordered hundreds of Lou Malnati's pizza. Not one. We've never had one free gift card.
Nope. Nothing.
We get these gift cards, and we give them all out to
Isn't
our listeners.
A shame?
We have never taken, I swear, not even one for ourselves.
No, I know.
Because they're for the listeners.
Right. But if we could, we would. It's just that we don't have them.
No, it's a rule, and I like to break rules.
And you don't like to follow the rules.
I am not going to get in trouble, and I'm not taking a gift card.
Oh, you wouldn't get in trouble now, would you?
I play by the rules. I don't get in any trouble.
Wait, you're confusing me.
No, not when it comes to this station.
You know what? You're going
to
get in trouble right now because we're going to be running late if you don't stop talking.
This was my dream to be on this radio station.
I know.
Roger, this was my dream to be on this radio station.
Know,
I'm not messing
too.
It up by taking a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. At the
All
end.
Right, are you done?
Right now.
All right, let's
Telling
do.
You, hey, I'm going to do my bad guy voice. You ready? Hey, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to take one of those $25 gift certificates.
You're going to get in trouble because we're going to run over.
All right.
So I'm going to help you out. We're going to take the fifth caller.
Fifth.
Call right now. I said fifth.
I'm taking the fifth.
I'm taking the fifth. 312-981-7200. Call right now. Take the fifth. Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. All right. We're going to play a little Real or Ridiculous with Ed. We've got him on the phone. Hey, Ed. How are you?
Hi there, you two.
Hi, how are
Hi,
you?
Ed.
I'm doing great.
Good. Glad to have you on the phone with us. We're going to do a little Shirley Temple, and here we go. Mm-hmm. Carl's an excellent lifeline. Number one.
You know what
one.
A Shirley Temple with some alcohol in it is, right? It's called a Dirty Shirley.
Yeah. Somebody let me know that from the text line.
Oh, I knew that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, that's what I know about alcohol.
All right.
A lot of nothing. Number
Give
one.
Give me that Dirty Shirley.
Have you ever tried that?
No. I don't drink. I don't drink alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Number one. In 1967, she ran for the House of Representatives as a Republican candidate. Real or ridiculous?
We'll go with real.
Well, here's the thing. I know she ran for office, but Lisa's so sneaky. I'm guessing she switched Republican with Democrat. See, that's what I think. But I'll go with Ed because he sounds very intelligent.
Well, that's a good idea. Ed knows what he's talking about. I switched nothing. That is absolutely true. That was
she
in California.
She is very sneaky.
Not so sneaky.
She
right,
needs
Ed?
A drink named after her called Sneaky Lisa.
I'll take that one. That one I'll taste. Number two. Her face appears three times on the cover of the Beatles album Yellow Submarine. Real or ridiculous?
Yellow Submarine. I'm going to go with ridiculous.
I'm going to disagree. I think she is on the cover.
All right. Ed knows what he's talking about. It's ridiculous. But I will tell you that it's on the cover of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album.
See what I'm saying about her?
See what he's got to deal with, Ed.
See what I'm talking about,
Ed? I'm telling you.
Man.
All right. I didn't hear the sound effect.
Ed got it right. I got it wrong.
Okay, Ed. You're two for two here.
She is just too much.
Yeah, I'm just too much. All right. Ed, her mother did her hair in pin curls for each movie. Every hairstyle had exactly 56 curls. Real or ridiculous?
Oh, my God. Talk about, what do you call that?
I don't know what you're trying to say.
What's that disease that you have when...
A disease?
You
know that disease?
No, what
it's like a
about?
Disease.
Anal retentive?
No.
It's not a disease.
What do you call that?
I have no idea what you're trying to say, but I don't have it, whatever it is. OCD?
OCD.
Just for sake of
OCD.
Time here, we're going to go with real.
Thank you, Ed.
Isn't OCD a disease?
It's a disorder.
It's a disorder.
It's close.
All right.
It's a little off, but you're really close.
hand grenades and horseshoes.
Again, you're right on.
All right, I'm gonna agree with Ed.
Good idea. Ed, you know what you're talking about. 3 for 3. Carl, you were close, but Ed, you are the big winner.
Way to
and
go,
for
Ed.
Time's sake, as he says, we're going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza, our favorite because Carl and I ordered all
today.
The time. That sounds great. Find one of the 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumelnatis.com. Thank you so much for playing. You did a great job, and you get a great pizza.
Way to go, Ed.
Love you guys.
Thanks,
take care.
Buddy. All right. Are you ready for the Harold Perry Show?
I sure am.
Well,
I'm excited to hear
little,
it.
Little background info. This was a situation comedy series. Came to radio for only one season in 1950. Harold Perry... As you all know, everyone listening to the show knows Harold Perry originated the role of Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve on the Gildersleeve series. Well, what happened was, in 1950, CBS was able to lure him away from NBC, because Gildersleeve was on NBC, lured him away, said, hey, here's what we'll do. We'll create a show around you. You can be one of the producers. You can be one of the owners. They really wanted to do this with him. He left like a top-rated series. And then Willard Waterman, of course, stepped into that role.
Right.
Willard Waterman ended up playing Gildersleeve for many, many years on radio. And then... even the television version. So if Hal Perry would have stayed with Gildersleeve, he would have not only played it for a lot longer, but been on television.
Probably.
He moved over to this show, and it was...
no good.
It was kind of a flop. It only lasted... well, it just never gained an audience. You know, that can happen. Hal Perry starred as Harold Hemp. He was Honest Harold, host of a radio program called The Happy Homemaker. That was the concept of this show. Hemp would interact with his mother... and his nephew, a marshal and a doctor, along with a switchboard operator and his girlfriends. It was kind of, I don't know, it was kind of a little, well, you'll get to hear it.
Yeah, I'm excited about
you'll
it.
Hear it. Yes, you'll hear it. It's a kind of a Mother's Day show, so I thought I'd play it. February 7th, 1951, part one now of the Harold Perry Show.
The Harold Perry Show.
Yeah.
And now, Harold Perry as Honest Harold, the homemaker. Well, it's the end of another day in Melrose Springs, and its good citizens are wending their way homeward from work. And chugging home in his 36 Essex is the town's most popular radio entertainer, Honest Harold.
Well, it'll be kind of nice to get home. Think I'll just stay in with Mother tonight. Maybe I can finish that new book I've been reading, The Egg and I. See, that reminds me. I'm supposed to stop at the market and get a dozen eggs. I can just find a place to park. Oh, there's a place right up there. I'll hurry up and pull in before somebody else... oop! There's another car trying to beat me to it. Just a moment there. I saw this place first. Still backing up. I'll show him. I'll get in there before he does. Hey, look out! Bumped right into me. What's the matter with you up there?
Where's that, Sonny?
Oh. Old man Walker in his 33 Rio. He's the most irritating...
What's the trouble?
Would you mind moving ahead, Mr. Walker? I saw this parking place first.
What'd you say?
Guess I'll have to go up there and talk to him. Lucky my headlight didn't fall off like it usually does. Mr. Walker?
Oh, howdy, Sonny. What's going on back there? I thought I felt something.
Naturally, you felt something. You backed into me.
I did?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was funny when my chewing tobacco jumped right out of the glove compartment.
Oh, my goodness. And look at my car back there. You put a dent in it.
Let's see. I put a dent in that car? How can you tell? Hey!
Now, just a minute, Walker.
You better get that heap off the street, Sonny. Tonight's can night.
Look here, Walker. That car isn't so old. It's a late 36. I said 36.
If you can get 36 bucks for that jalopy, you better take it.
I'm in a hurry. Are you going to let me in that parking space?
Sure, I don't want the parking space.
What?
I was just practicing backing up.
Oop, you scared my headlight off.
What's that?
Nothing. Goodbye. No, thanks, Mother. That third piece kind of filled me up. That was a wonderful dinner.
Thank you, son. Harold.
Yes, Mother?
There's something I ought to tell you.
Oh, what's that?
Well, you'll think I'm silly.
Mother? What is it?
A gentleman is calling on me tonight.
What? Well, Mother. A gentleman caller. Well, I think that's wonderful. Where'd you meet him?
Oh, I get around.
Oh, my goodness. And who is this gay Lothario?
Oh, he's my leading man.
What?
Yes, we're going to be in a play together. Our old folks group is giving it, you know, the Sunny Side of 70 Club.
Oh, yes. Well, that's kind of cute. What's the play called, Mother?
Oh, the name of it is Penelope from Pawtucket.
Oop.
And I play Penelope. I'm in love with the captain of a whaling boat, Roby Dick.
Roby Dick.
Look out yonder, out the window.
Hmm?
Is that a ship out there?
Looks like the can box to me.
Roby Dick, you've come back. You've come back. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, brother.
I was only acting, Harold.
Yeah, I'm glad you told me, Mother.
And then the captain and I have a very romantic scene. We hold hands and watch the sunset together.
Mother, you sound like you're taking that part kind of seriously.
Well, my leading man is rather charming.
Who is he?
Well, his name is... Oh, there he is. Will you let him in, Harold?
What?
I want to put on my butterfly brooch.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be right in.
Yeah. Mother's pretty cute, all right, primping up like that. New friend must be quite a chic. Wonder who he is.
Well, hello, Sonny.
Zeef. Mr. Walker, don't tell me you're Mother's leading man.
Sure am, Captain Roby Dick.
Yeah.
Haul out the fishing nets, men. I see a mackerel. That's you, Sonny.
Oh, brother.
Well, nice place you got here.
Glad you like it.
Since your mother and I are in this play together, I guess you'll be seeing a lot of me.
That's ducky.
I say.
I said I'm very lucky.
Yeah, I guess you are.
Good evening, Mr. Walker.
Well, hello, Mrs. Hemp. You're looking lovely this evening.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Harold, have you met Mr. Walker?
Oh, yes, Mother. We bumped into each other downtown.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, Penelope.
Yes, Captain Roby Dick.
I brought you a little something. A bag of peanut brittle.
My, that was sweet of you.
No, it wasn't much.
It certainly wasn't.
Sit down, Mr. Walker.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Oop, taking my easy chair. It's a wonder he doesn't smoke my cigars, too.
See, you got some cigars here. Mind if I smoke one?
Oh, no. Go right ahead. Take two. They're small.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll take one for the road.
I wish you'd take the road.
Well, I have the script. Shall we start to rehearse, Mr. Walker?
Okay, Penelope. Shall we do the romantic part first?
Sounds like Errol Flynn at 90.
Sonny.
What?
Isn't it getting past your bedtime?
No, I usually stay up till 9 o'clock.
Well, okay. Stick around, you'll see some real acting. Chautauqua style.
Yeah,
There's a storm a-brewing tonight. Batten down the hatches, man. Think they'll hear me in the last row?
I think they'll hear you in Charlieville.
Oh, heavens to fish hooks. My sweet Penelope waits for me. And here I am, miles out to sea. This is terrible.
This is where I leave the boat. Roby Dick. All people mother had to be in a play with him. Be awful if she got to like that laughing hyena. Well, that's ridiculous, of course. Long as I'm on the loose tonight, though, might as well drop in the dancing academy and see Theodora. Hope my little dancing teacher is in. Door chimes need tuning.
Who is it?
It's Haroldy Waroldy.
Oh, goody Woody.
Goody Woody. Gee, we play cute.
Hello, Harold.
Hello, Theodora.
I thought you were going to stay home and read a book tonight.
Well.
I know. You just couldn't stay away from your little Theo.
Well, could be yo. Besides, it was a little crowded in our parlor this evening. Mother's rehearsing a play with old Mr. Walker.
Oh, isn't that cute?
Well, yes. Kind of a romantic play, so it made me think of you.
Oh. What shall we do tonight, Teddy Bear?
Teddy Bear.
I guess it's a little late to go bowling or go to the movies. Looks like we'll just have to stay here and sit on the sofa.
Yeah, too bad. Well, shall we sit down?
All righty.
Theodora?
Hmm?
Mind if I turn the lamp down a little?
Turn the lamp down?
Yeah. There. I'm the man who came to dimmer. Had that written on my cuff. Sorry the laundry didn't get it now. But this is nice, isn't it? Two of us sitting here on the sofa, looking into each other's eyes. Guess this is what people used to do before they had television sets.
Shall I get a little music on the radio?
Sure, what the heck. Gee, that's pretty. I love Guy Lombardo.
In dreams I kiss your hand, madame. Your dainty fingertips. And while in slumberland, madame, I'm begging for your lips. I haven't any right, madame, to do the things I do. Just when I hold you tight, madame, you vanish with the night, madame. In dreams I kiss your hand, madame, and pray my dreams come true.
That was beautiful, Harold.
Shucks, it wasn't anything.
You know, I think you deserve a kiss for singing that song.
Well, I'm waiting.
Here.
Think I'll sing another chorus.
I think I'd better turn off the radio.
Oop, there goes Guy Lombardo. Gosh, love is wonderful, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Harold?
Yeah?
I was just thinking of something.
What's that?
Well, I was thinking about your mother and Mr. Walker.
Oh?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if they fell in love and got married?
Married? But Theodora, they hardly know each other.
Well, it could be love at first sight.
Not at first sight of Mr. Walker.
people are in a play together, they get very romantic.
Oh?
Oh, wouldn't it be cute if you went home and found out they were engaged?
Engaged? Oh, no.
And just think, someday Mr. Walker might be my father-in-law.
Your father-in-law? Hey, that makes him my father. Zeef, see you later, Theodora.
Where are you going, Harry?
I'm going home to Mother before she marries Father. I mean...
So on a rating of 1 to 10, Lisa, I'd give this like a 3.
I don't think the writing was terribly interesting. I know his character was the same as he plays on The Great
There's still another 15 minutes judge. But, you know, you got to remember, there were hundreds and hundreds of radio series during the golden age of radio, right? Not all of them could be great. This one this one just never attracted an audience, and it was gone in one season.
Yeah, so I guess we're not alone in that. But then again, you know, even when we play great stuff, what we think is great here, there's always people that love it and people
text
that
text us. We'd love to know what you think of it. 312-981-7200. It's interesting to hear him doing really the Gildersleeve voice and character, everything on a completely
different
series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Dave's interviewing Christian Stoltz. Christian Stolte was in nearly every one of our Twilight Zone radio dramas.
I remember.
Christian Stolte, one of the best actors to ever come out of Chicago, just a tremendous actor.
I interviewed
lives
him
here.
Once as well for a theater, for a show he did
Great
here in the city.
Great guy, tremendous personality, terrific actor. And Christian was in all my Bible projects and pretty much in almost every episode of the Twilight Zone radio dramas. Once he, Claire Simon, I was introduced to Christian Stolte through Claire Simon. She said, you gotta meet this guy. He's a great actor. And man, when he auditioned, I was like, okay, are you ready? You're going to be booked for like the next 7 years as I'm doing these shows. He was amazing on all of them. Roger, what's the weather like in Schaumburg?
I said Schaumburg.
Yeah.
Schaumburg.
Yeah, but so is the weather pretty similar to Schaumburg in Schaumburg?
Don't you have a theme song to play?
We do.
We do.
Thank you.
We could cut that right off because Schaumburg was way more important.
No, I said Schaumburg. Thank you.
Back to WGN Radio Theater.
In Schaumburg.
Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I'm tickling the ivies here. Can you hear me, Roger?
Yeah, they slapped you back, too.
All right, well, what do you think of this Harold Perry show? Are you listening to this at all?
It's wonderful.
Or no? You like it?
Yeah.
All right. I'm not so crazy about it.
Well, I mean, it's the same character.
He's hatching now.
It's the same character.
Well,
as the great Gildersleeve, he's still doing the same bits.
Yeah.
So it kind of has that same feel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did not know that he had gone on to this series.
Mm-hmm. That's why you need to listen to this show. You'll
I know.
Learn all about classic
and
radio.
And I'll learn more about it if you get right back into it.
You know what? I'll learn you something.
You'll learn me something?
I'll learn
you.
You
got nothing else to do, do you, Roger?
Yeah, I'll learn you something.
I got a plane to catch.
I bet you do.
Actually, Lisa.
I'll be on there with you.
Lisa had a very good comment. We were not off the air. She said to me, but it's good that we play, you know, everything. I mean,
well, right.
The great stuff, the not so great stuff, mm-hmm. because that lets our listeners get a better perspective of what the golden age of radio was. It
exactly.
wasn't always phenomenal. There were things that were kind of clunkers.
But it also teaches a little bit about what you like and what you don't and what shows you appreciate, and you learn a little bit along the way.
Just like television.
Fine.
There's some shows that only last a year, 2 years, and then there are shows that last, you know, 15, 20 years, and they're more talked about.
Yeah.
But the golden age of radio, it has been lost to time, with the exception of your show. And so people who remember that time want to re-experience the entire thing, not just one or two shows, as you say. Not the more popular ones. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely right.
I don't understand what you're saying.
you know, it's interesting, and then we'll get back into the show. I just want to make one comment. Yeah. Growing up and listening to these shows, you know, because I was collecting them, obviously, I started listening to these in 1975, so they were already way gone off the air.
Yeah.
I was collecting these shows over the years. I would listen to some of these programs like, I'm going to give you the title of one, Vic and Sade. All right. Now, Vic and Sade, when I first started listening to Vic and Sade, I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I was like, I don't even know if I want to collect this show.
Right.
Well, I now listen to Vic and Sade, think it's one of the most brilliant shows ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I guess, when and, you know, time in your life when you're hearing these shows. I was much younger then. Now I can appreciate the writing. The same thing with the Stan Freberg show. When I first heard the Stan Freberg show, before I even knew Stan Freberg, I was kind of like, this is silly. I don't get this.
Right.
It's kind of... Then, as I got older, I appreciate it. In fact, I liked it so much that when Art Fleming, who was the host of my show at the time, he unfortunately passed away, and I was like, well, I have to hire another name, and Stan was, you know, Stan was available, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get to now work with this genius, Stan Freberg. And for years, he was the host of my show, my syndicated show. And so you just, I guess it's when you listen to them, what age
and
you are.
And also the time in history. In other words, Vic and Sade, when it first came out, everyone who listened to that could relate to it because that was the time that it aired and they grew up. You, at first, you weren't growing up in that time when you were younger.
Yeah.
And like you said, it wasn't until you got older and could understand the situation.
Put it in perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, because Vic and Sade really is one of the most brilliant shows of all time.
It is so laid back.
So
it's
great.
It's very natural.
Great. Yeah,
very
it's incredible. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Roger. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's get back now to the Harold Perry show.
Better hurry home. Wonder if Theodora could be right. Mother did blush a little when he handed her the peanut brittle. Gosh, suppose Mother did marry Mr. Walker? I'd have to call him Daddy. No, sir. I'd run away from home first. I'd get a job stacking soap chips at the laundromat. I wouldn't have him...
Hello, Harold.
Oh, hello, Doc.
Howdy, boy.
Well, Pete, what are you two doing around here?
Oh, we just dropped by your house, Harold.
Yeah, but you wasn't there.
No kidding.
We saw a friend of yours in the parlor, Harold.
Yeah, Mr. Walker.
He's an awful sweet fella. He gave us both the cigar.
Oh, that was real nice of him.
And Harold, you should have seen him and your mother. They looked so cute, sitting there on the sofa.
Yeah.
They were rehearsing a scene from the play. I guess it was kind of romantic. They was holding hands.
Oop. You know, it kind of reminded me of that Shakespeare play where Romeo took Juliet into a restaurant.
What?
Yeah. You know, Romeo'd what Juliet?
That's a doozy.
Yeah, it certainly is.
You know, Harold, you know, it looks to me like your mother and Mr. Walker kind of stuck on each other.
What?
Yes, I do declare one of these days you're liable to hear a radio newsflash about that romance.
Now, Pete.
Scoop, my first exclusive. What mother of what young crooner will soon middle islet with what man about town?
Fellas, cut it out now. You're exaggerating this thing. They're not going to get married.
Well, I think it'd be real nice, Harold. A grown boy like you needs a father.
I do not.
Yes, you do. He'd tuck you in bed at night and tell you the story of the three bears.
Fellas.
He might even sing you to sleep. Climb upon my knee, sonny boy. Though you're only three, sonny boy.
This is what killed Vaudeville. Peter, big help. Be awful if Mother did fall for Mr. Walker. Mother!
Oh, hello, son.
Hello. Where's Mr. Walker?
Oh, he left, Harold.
He did? He left early. That's a good sign.
I'm just clearing away the cocoa cup.
Look at Mother. What am I worried about? She's too sensible to fall for a character like Mr. Walker. Sure. And I thought she might want to marry him. Ridiculous.
It'd be so nice to have a man around the house.
Yeah.
So nice.
Mother.
It's so nice to have a man around the house.
Mother, don't sing that.
One who'd hold my hand a little and who'd bring me peanut brittle.
Boy, just call me Sonny Boy.
Well, Honest Harold is spending a sleepless night. Every time he closes his eyes, he sees his mother married to the irritating Mr. Walker. And this is a nightmare to Harold. It's 2 o'clock in the morning now, and we find Harold flopping around on his bed like a tortured dolphin.
What a night. think I'll turn over on my stomach. Darn it, now my feet are cold. My booties slipped off again. Just got to get to sleep and forget all about Mr. Walker. Just close my eyes and count sheep. One little sheep, two little sheep, three little oop. That one looked like Mr. Walker. Ye gods, how long is this going on? Yeah, I am getting a little drowsy. Think I'm going to make it this time. Good night, Harold. Sleep tight.
Well, look at my little sonny boy, tucked away in bed.
Zeef, what you for?
Want Daddy to tell you a bedtime story, sonny?
Uggle muggle.
Once upon a time, there were three bears.
Go away, Walker, go away. Anyway, I know that story.
Good morning, Station Case JP. Just a moment, I'll connect you.
Good morning, Gloria.
Oh, good morning, Harold. How's your mother?
What? Oh, she's fine.
And how's Mr. Walker?
Now, see here, Gloria.
When's the wedding?
What?
Oh, you're going to make an awfully cute flower girl.
Oh, Gloria, just because they got a little crush on each other doesn't mean that they're going to get married. After all, mother's past the impulsive age.
Well, people are never too old to fall in love, Harold. Uh-huh. I know a couple. Well, they're both 85, and they fell in love at first sight.
They did?
Yes. 15 minutes after they met, they became engaged.
Engaged? You mean he gave her a ring?
No, he gave her his Townsend button.
Oh, goodness. Oh,
but they didn't stay engaged very long.
Oh, they didn't?
No, 2 days later, they eloped.
Oop. You say they were 85?
Yes.
Gosh. I'd better watch Mother Gloria. She's only 63. No telling what a kid like that'll do. Good idea of mine, coming home for lunch. I'd kind of keep an eye on Mother and see what she's up to. A fine thing, playing detective with my own mother. Mother, I'm home.
Oh, hello, Harold. You didn't tell me you were coming home for lunch.
Well, I just thought I'd sneak, come home and surprise you.
Oh, that's nice.
How are things, Mother? Read any good books lately?
What?
I mean, what have you been doing all morning?
Oh, little dab here, a little dab there, and a rub-a-dub-dub in the tub.
Didn't find out much there.
Oh, I did get a phone call from Mr. Walker.
You did?
Yes, and we had an awfully nice talk.
And what did you talk about?
About 20 minutes. Yeah.
Mother's pretty cagey, all right. Oop, there she goes again. I think that's what she's singing. Mother?
Yes?
If there's anything you want to tell me, Mother, don't be afraid. I'll understand.
Well, I do have something to confess, Harold.
You do? Here it comes.
Yes. When I was sweeping under your bed this morning, I broke a wing off your model airplane.
Oh, that's all right, Mother. Just an old P-36. And I thought they were going to lope. Well, Mother, how about lunch?
All right, son. I'll fix it right away. And then I have a busy afternoon ahead of me.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, I have to pack my suitcase.
Huh?
I told Mr. Walker I'd be all ready when he comes by for me.
Eve?
And, Harold, is that old ladder still out in the garage? What? We want to use it tonight.
Zoof.
Well, I'll get your lunch now.
Never mind, Mother. I think I'll just take a hot bath instead. Pete and Doc, I want to thank you fellows for coming to this meeting. I certainly appreciate it.
Oh, sure, it's all right, boy. I was right here in my office anyhow.
Well, I was glad to do it, Harold.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. When I got your phone call at the dog clinic, I said to myself, my old friend needs me. So I dropped my flea powder and rushed right over.
Well, that's certainly very nice of you,
Doc. Yes, sir. When a man's drowning and going down for the third time, who's there with a life preserver? Old Docky Anthony.
Yeah, all right, Doc. Now, the reason I called you fellows together is, well, it looks like my mother and Mr. Walker are going to elope tonight.
Well, congratulations, Harold.
And my felicitations to you, boy.
Well, fellas, you don't understand. I want your help.
Okay, boy. I'll hold the ladder.
Stop the clowning. This is serious.
You're only kidding, Harold.
Fellas, I wouldn't mind my mother getting married, but Charlie Walker. Imagine hearing that laugh around the house all the time.
We understand, Harry.
And I've got to stop Mother from rushing into this. She'd make an awful mistake. I just thought you fellas could help me figure out some way to stop him from eloping.
And now, let me see.
Man, I got it. Huh? I know how we can stop the eloping.
You do? How, Doc?
Yes, sir. Doc Yancey's come through again.
What is it, Doc?
Oh, Doc Yancey, you're so clever.
Will you stop taking bows and tell us your idea?
Well, the thing to do in a case like this is to sabotage the getaway car.
How's that, boy?
Well, now when Walker parks in front of Harold's house tonight, we'll just cross a few of his wires on his car and he won't be able to get away at all.
Say, that'll fix his magneto. That's a great idea, Doc.
Oh, it wasn't much. All I did was save the day, that's all.
You certainly did, Doc. We'll sneak over to my house as soon as it's dark, fellas. Honest Harold has just begun to fight. Mother shall not elope tonight. There's my house, fellas. It's nice and dark, too. Nobody can see us. In fact, I can't even see you. Fellas, are you still with me?
I'm right here, Harold.
Where's Pete? Pete? Boo! Will you, Pete? Walker will hear us out here.
Is his car here, Harold?
Yeah, there it is. Parked in my driveway, just like he owned the place already. And there's the ladder against the house, like I told you, at Mother's window.
Well, we better get to work on the car before they come down.
Yeah, okay, Doc.
Shucks, fellas. I'm starting to feel kind of sentimental about this elopement. I think I'll just tie my shoes on the bumper and leave.
Pete, go on, Doc. I'll pull up the hood, Doc, and be quiet.
All right. Yes, sir, it's a good thing I thought of this idea. Whenever you're in trouble, Harold, you just come
to
me.
Yeah, pull up the hood.
Oh.
Gosh, can't even see the motor.
Pretty old car. Maybe hasn't got one.
Guess we'll just have to feel around here.
Yeah, well, hurry up. They'll be coming down the ladder any minute. See if you can pull a wire loose.
Okay.
Yeah.
There. I'm pulling on something. Mm-hmm.
Feels like fan belt.
Pete, you're pulling my tie.
Beg your pardon, boy.
Hey! Huh? I got hold of a wire. I'll loosen it up a little. Well, it came out altogether.
Yeah. You won't even run now.
Yeah, we better make sure. And see what I can do. Yeah, oh, here's something. Well, what do you know? I just got me a carburetor.
It sure is.
Well, what the heck? I might as well get in on this, too. Feel around in here. I got something. Look what I got, fellas. The fuel pump. Cheap material.
Hey, you sure hit the jackpot, boy.
Here, hold it, Doc. I'll see what else I can find. Haven't had so much fun since Halloween.
Why, Harold, is that you out there?
Oh, hello, Mother.
How's she doing, Sonny?
I'm stopping you from eloping with my mother, Mr. Walker.
Eloping?
Why, Harold, whatever gave you that idea?
Huh?
We're not eloping. We're just going to a rehearsal of our play.
You're not eloping? But what about the suitcase, Mother? And the ladder?
Oh, we're just using them for props.
Props?
That's theatrical language, Sonny.
But...
Well, we better get started, Penelope.
Harold, better tell him about the car, boy.
Mr. Walker, I'm afraid you won't be able to go in this car of yours tonight.
That ain't my car, Sonny. It's your car. Mine's out there in the street. I had to back yours out of the garage to get the ladder.
If you boys will excuse us, Mr. Walker and I'd better get started.
You're very well, Penelope. Well, I'll see you later, Sonny.
Harold.
Yeah?
Here's your carburetor, boy.
You better take your fuel pump, too.
Thanks.
See you later, Harold.
So long, boy.
You have just heard the Harold Perry Show, Honest Harold. The supporting players tonight included Jane Morgan, Parley Bayer, Cliff Arquette, and Maury Alden, and featured Gloria Holliday as Gloria and Joseph Kearns as Old Doc Yak Yak. Norman McDonald directed, and the music was composed and conducted by Jack Meekin. Honest Harold, created by Harold Perry, was written by Gene Stone, Jack Robinson, and Dick Powell. Stay tuned now for the Bing Crosby Show, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations.
And it's good, too.
Bob Lamon speaking. This is CBS, where you meet Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, every Thursday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that's the Harold Perry Show, February 7th, 1951. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
This is a commercial for a super beta prostate, Lisa, but then they call the pill that you take P3. Like, why would they do that? I'm trying to pee less, and it's P3.
Is it the letter P, or is it spelled out, P-E-E?
It's probably the letter.
That's
I don't know.
That's what I'm guessing.
But the pill you take is called P3.
Right, like three times a day, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
You could just make it like pee three times a day.
No, three times. That's not very many times.
Exactly. That's why you take it.
All right. In our next hour, Straight Arrow, a good Western adventure from 1949.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. In this hour, Straight Arrow, good Western from 1949. We're going to play our game, Is It Real or Is It Ridiculous? Sponsored by Cat's Pride.
The celebrity is Patrick Swayze.
Okay.
And I know we both knew him.
Yes, we did.
And we're going to give away two tickets to the Porchlight Revisit show, Minnie's Boys, which is at Porchlight Theater here in Chicago, May 22nd and May 23rd, about the Marx Brothers.
All right. Call us at 312-981-7200. Which caller
would
you like?
We're going to take caller number 4. So call right now, and we will be right back. Come on, baby, let's get ridiculous. All right, we're going to get ridiculous with Gerald. Hey, Gerald, how are you? We got Gerald on the phone?
No, you have Joe on the phone.
Joe.
Oh, Joe, sorry.
Okay. Hi, Joe.
Little
no
Eric.
Problem.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Great, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Sorry about that, Joe. We're happy to play with you. We're going to do a little Patrick Swayze. And number one, in the movie Ghost, the role of Sam was offered to Arnold Schwarzenegger prior to Patrick Swayze. Real or ridiculous?
Carl, can you help me out here?
Oh, man. I think Lisa's being sneaky. I'd say ridiculous.
My first instinct was false.
Go with your instinct. You are right. That is false. They did actually offer it to Bruce Willis. That's not...
Now that I would have...
Now that's definitely a different person. Number two, Dirty Dancing was the only movie that Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey did together. Real or ridiculous?
Sheesh, again, a poser here.
Not going to make this easy. You're going to have to work for these tickets.
There you go. I understand. I'm going to say false.
I think that is the only movie they did together. So I'm going to disagree.
I'm saying Dirty Dancing was the only movie. So are you saying that's real or ridiculous?
I think it's real, yes.
Okay. And what did you think? Is that real or ridiculous, Joe?
Well, that's the only movie.
Okay.
Okay.
So that is incorrect.
Wow.
It is not the only movie. Wah, wah. You got a sound effect there for
well,
you.
Hang on a second.
I did it for you. I just didn't do enough wah-wahs. They were in a movie called Red Dawn in 1984.
Oh, yeah.
You know that movie?
Yes, I do.
Oh, see, there you go. Mm. All right, one for one here. Number three, Patrick Swayze attended Joffrey Ballet School in New York City. Real or ridiculous?
What do you think, Joe?
I think that's probably true.
I agree. I think it's true.
That is true. He absolutely did. He was a great dancer, and that is why. Joe, you are a winner. You did a great job. I don't know. It's a little echo here. So you have won two tickets to Porchlight Revisits Minnie's Boys. It's playing May 22nd and 23rd at the award-winning Porchlight Music Theater. And we're going to take Chicago back in time in this look at the young Marx Brothers at the Chicago premiere. You can get tickets at porchlightmusictheater.org. And thank you so much for playing the game. It was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Terrific.
Thanks,
enjoy
Joe.
The show.
Appreciate you, my friend. All right. Big winner.
You did a good job.
You got two out of three?
Yeah.
All right. Not bad.
It's pretty good.
Pretty darn good.
I think I
had nine in a row at one point a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, something like that. Not nine times, just nine questions.
Yeah, I got nine questions in a row.
Yeah, well, your streak has well broke.
Oh, gosh. By a long shot. That's for sure. All right. Well, it's time now for Straight Arrow. Now, this was a Western that came to Mutual Radio in 1948. Now, this was all about the adventures of rancher Steve Adams, who in disguise, Lisa, put on a disguise now, he became the Comanche Indian Straight Arrow. When bad people or other dangerous things threatened, he would dress up as a Comanche Indian and kick some dupa. A Straight Arrow, he rode a Palomino named Fury, and he was an unparalleled horseman, master archer, quite skilled at hand-to-hand combat, too. In other words, you didn't mess with this guy, okay?
Sounds a lot like you, Carl.
Yeah, don't mess with him. Howard Culver played Steve Adams and the Straight Arrow, you know, because he dressed up as Straight Arrow.
Gotcha.
Same guy. Was sponsored by Nabisco Shredded Wheat. I think that's still around.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Nabisco,
I like that.
Shredded Wheat, that's
for
still
sure.
around.
Yeah.
Lasted until 1951. It spawned a popular comic strip and a series of comic books. So, yeah, popular character, and it had a radio show for a while. So let's tune this in. Howard Culver stars in a show called Crooked Trail from July 18th, 1949. Here's part one of Straight Arrow.
Nabisco, Nabisco is the name to know. For a breakfast you can't beat, eat Nabisco shredded wheat. Keen eyes fixed on a flying target. A gleaming arrow set against a rawhide string. A strong bow bent almost to the breaking point. And then... Great Arrow! Nabisco Shredded Wheat presents Straight Arrow, a new thrilling adventure story from the exciting days of the Old West. To friends and neighbors alike, Steve Adams appeared to be nothing more than the young owner of the Broken Bow cattle spread. But when danger threatened innocent people, and when evildoers plotted against justice, then Steve Adams' rancher disappeared. And in his place came a mysterious stalwart Indian, wearing the dress and war paint of a Comanche, riding the great golden Palomino Fury, galloping out of the darkness to take up the cause of law and order throughout the West, comes the legendary figure of Red Arrow. During most of the year, only two trains a week came through Longhorn Junction, blowing their whistles and never stopping. But in the fall, Longhorn Junction woke up. The loading pens were strengthened. The rows of empty cars lined the siding, ready to take on the thousands of cattle that would be brought in off the range. The town filled up with buyers from the east, ready to pay spot cash. And along with them came other men, dishonest men, scheming to get their hands on that cash any way they could.
Yeah, I tell you, I got it all figured out, Slagle. You and me are going to take over the Rockin' W trail herd and leave here with a fistful of cash.
No, why don't we just hold up one of the cattle buyers?
Ah, don't be loco, Slagle. The town's busting with lawmen. My way is better.
How?
The Rockin' W Ranch is a long ways off, ain't it? Old man Williams is down with rheumatiz, so he can't even set a horse. He'll have to send somebody else as trail boss.
You mean with a herd? Here at a Longhorn to sell the cattle?
Yeah.
Yeah, his foreman will handle the selling, sure.
Schlegel, there's a new cattle buyer in town. He's eager to buy, and he don't know one foreman from another.
Yeah, I still don't savvy.
It's simple. We just... hold on. Here he comes now.
Who's that?
That new cattle buyer I was telling you about. Now, you follow my lead, Schlegel. Don't act surprised no matter what I tell him. Well, howdy, Granger.
Good morning, gentlemen. I came down to look at the loading pens. Won't be long before they're choked with steers, eh?
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Granger. Say, shake hands with Cal Schlegel.
How do you do, Granger?
You'll be seeing him again pretty soon. He's foreman of the Rockin' W. Yes, sir, the foreman. When he gets here with the Rockin' W cattle, he'll sell them to you for a fair price. Won't you, Slagle?
Slagle, you will let me make the first offer, won't you? See, I'm new here, and the other cattle buyers have me at a disadvantage. I'll give you a fair price.
Well, that's mighty nice of you, Granger. I'll be glad to deal with you.
Several days later, far from Longhorn, the Rocking W cattle were ready to take the trail. Steve Adams and Packy, who had come over from the Broken Bow to help with the roundup, said goodbye to Williams and his trail boss, Bob Kincaid.
Sure you and Packy won't come to Longhorn with the herd, Mr. Adams? Mr. Williams, it'd feel a heap sight safer having you two along with me.
Now, Kincaid, you know I trust you.
Oh, I'll get him to Longhorn, but I ain't used to dealing with cattle buyers, Mr. Williams. I might get cheated.
You better not, boy. The whole future of my ranch is tied up in them steers.
You don't have to worry, Williams. They'll bring a fair price.
Kino, there ain't no trick to it, Kincaid. Just set the cattle buyers bidding again one another till you get the best offer, that's all.
Yeah, but don't take any checks, boy. Remember that. It's got to be cash, savvy? Hard cash. I'll remember, Mr. Williams.
All right, you buckaroos. Start that herd moving. Ride them along.
Days later, as the Rocking W herd moved through a narrow pass.
There they come, Slagle.
Yeah, Denver, that's the Rocking W right now, if I can make out the brand.
We got the trail crew out number 2-1.
Yep.
All right now, gents. Just like Burley told me when I said adios, Longhorn, this is where we take Rocking W over. Y'all set? Yeah. All right. Put spurs to your horses. Sling plenty of lead. Here we go!
While heading for Longhorn Junction, the Rocking W trail herd is ambushed.
All right, boys, cut it down!
Before Bob Kincaid can rally his men, Slagle and his outlaw crew sweep down with guns blazing, pouring a hail of lead at the surprised cowboys. In a few moments, all resistance is put down.
All right, that's it, gents. Tie him up good. All that's left of them. Denver.
Yeah, right here, Slagle. You want me to head for Longhorn?
Yes, fast as you can prod your pony. Tell Burley everything went off like clockwork. Tell him he'll roll into Longhorn in 3 or 4 days. You know where to locate him.
I'll find him. Adios.
Come on, boy.
Now, where's the foreman of this outfit? Which one of the foreman boys?
Right here, Slagle. His name's Kincaid.
Kincaid, eh? Well, pleased to meet up with you, mister.
I ain't. If I wasn't tied up, I'd show you plenty. Gunning down my men, rustling cattle.
Mister, you got us dead wrong. We ain't changing a single brand. All we're going to do is collect the cash ourselves.
Collect the cash?
Yeah. You and your waddies will be kept prisoners. We got a cabin up in the hills. As for the Rockin' W trail herd, when it pulls into Longhorn Junction...
So that's it. You'll make out like you're off for Rockin' W.
You sell the beef and collect the money.
Why, you ornery son.
Why, I'm fool.
Stop wrestling. You can't get loose. It's all over, but this shouting.
But Slagle and Burley have not taken account of one thing. When Steve Adams and Packy left the Rocking W, they did not return to the Broken Bowl.
Steve, this is the way to Longhorn Junction. Didn't you turn down Kincaid when he asked us to go along with him?
I did, Packy. He's trail boss, and it's better for him to stand on his own feet. But he's inexperienced when it comes to selling cattle, so I figured...
Chino, I'm savvy. This way, we'll be in Longhorn before the Rockin' W pulls in. We just stick around, make certain he don't get cheated. Is that it, Steve?
That's it, Packy. In a town like Longhorn Junction, you never know what might happen.
When Steve and Patty arrived, Longhorn was bursting at the seams. Cattle milled through the streets, raising dust that covered every house and storefront. Every wadi's been off the range for the first time in months, hooked and hollered, their pockets loaded down with pay cash.
Get out of the way, gents. I'm a return snorter, and it's my night to haul.
The hitching rails were lined solid with horses of every description. Mustangs, broncs, quarter horses. And as Steve and Packy finally tied up in front of the Alkali Cafe, they were almost bowled over by a late arrival.
Hey, what in blazes? That Mustang almost stepped on my boot. What's all fired rush?
Get out of my way, Wani. I got no time for pilgrims.
Pilgrims? Why, you lucky...
Easy, Packy. Go ahead, stranger.
I am to, mister, without no orders from you.
Steve, what'd you hold me back for? That high
Simmer down, Packy. Simmer down. We're just in off the range. Reckon he's a mite ornery from being penned up too long.
Busted right past without even a buy your leave. There he goes into the cafe. Probably shoot up the town before he's through.
Stop fretting, partner. It'll be a while before the Rockin' W gets here. Might as well get used to the... Now, that's odd.
Huh?
The horse that gent was riding.
Oh, what about it? Just a plain buckskin?
The brand, Packy. Here, on his quarter. That gent was riding a Rockin' W pony.
Hey, Denver, over this way. Everything all set, Denver?
Yeah, barely all set. Came straight off the trail. Everything went smooth as goose grease. We gunned down two of them and grabbed the others.
Slagle coming in?
Yeah, him and the boys. Hey, that cattle buyer all fixed?
Ranger? He's so eager to prove up to his company, he'll buy first and ask questions later.
Hey, I got something else in the bargain, Burley. Got me a right nice pony.
Huh?
Yeah, I lost mine in the fracas, so I took one of the Rockin' W's. Who's plenty fast, too. I got here just...
Denver, that gent's looking at you. Who is he?
Well, no, Burley. He was out at the hitching rail when I come in. Hey, what's the matter, stranger? Your partner's still riled?
You're dang tootin', I'm riled.
No, Packy. We came in to ask a couple of questions.
Questions?
No, not for you, stranger. This gent with you. Mister, is Kincaid in town already?
Kincaid?
Easy, Denver. Who is Kincaid?
He knows. Foreman of the Rockin' W.
Foreman of the Rockin' W. Well, now, mister, I hear a gent named Slagle is the foreman.
Then you hear wrong. His name is Kincaid. Say, what's eating you two? You're off the Rockin' W, aren't you?
Never heard of it.
Never heard?
Packy.
But you're...
Well, we made a mistake, gents. Sorry to trouble you.
Denver, you look wicked.
What did I do?
Saying you never heard of the Rockin' W when your horse wears the brand?
You mean they spotted it?
Didn't you hear the gent called Packy right after the other one cut him off? Sure, they spotted it.
They don't look like lawmen. What can they do?
I don't know, Denver. But with Slagle showing up soon, I don't aim to leave nothing to chance. On your feet, Denver. Better keep an eye on them two hombres just in case.
Hey,
I'm going to keep my eyes on those two hombres just in case, Lisa.
Yeah, I think you should be on a, you know, like a Gunsmoke or Straight Arrow type radio show. You'd be really good at that.
Yeah, let me see if I could do the accent.
Like a tough guy.
I'm gonna keep my eyes on those two hombres no matter what.
You're an excellent tough guy.
That's pretty good, right?
You're good at that.
Ashley, what do you think? Was that pretty good there?
Yeah, I thought that.
Ashley Byans here.
I thought that was pretty spot on.
What do you think?
Hey, listen, you.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Denver, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to take you to the pass, and we're going to cross the Crooked Trail. That's the name of this here radio show. What do you think of that? Huh?
That's pretty good.
I'd say it's about as good as I can do.
I close my eyes?
It's about as good as I can do. You know, when I would cast these people in the Twilight Zone radio dramas, and I was always blown away at how great, you know, because we used only the best actors here in Chicago, and they would do the roles, and I'd be like, man, I wish I could do that. I wish I could act that good. You know?
And that's why we're going to hear Christian Salte talk about his experiences on with Dave Plyer.
Now, people think, I used to get this a lot. Oh, I can do voices. People would come up to me. Not people that weren't making a living as an actor. You know, they were, you know, a garbage man, or they made pies or whatever. You know, they're a baker or this and that. And they learned that I did the Twilight Zone. Oh, I can do voices. I was like, no, I'm looking for people that can act, which is a skill. It's a tremendous, tremendous skill.
Well, you can appreciate it once you know how difficult it actually is.
Let me tell you something. Having directed these hundreds of people in these shows, it's amazing how great they are. I mean, just it's so hard to do this, to do, you know, act in a radio drama or on TV.
I know.
These people deserve to make the money they make. They deserve. The acting is a tremendous skill. It really is. I have a lot of respect for them. And it's a skill that I do not have.
Well,
Definitely
it's evolving, not. You yeah. know, it, over time. We're still working on it.
Yeah, I can play
that.
The bad guy.
We're still working on it.
I'm doing a voice.
It's
I'm
a
doing a bad
pony.
Guy voice. All right, we're listening to Straight Arrow from July 18th, 1949, Crooked Trail with Howard Culver. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Downtown Schaumburg here.
We are definitely in the heart of the loop
All
here.
Allstate Skyline Studio in beautiful Schaumburg, Illinois.
No, we are actually just east of Michigan Avenue here. Yeah, Roger's hiding under the desk over there.
No, I'm not hiding. I'm just like, you know,
he's the mayor. He's the mayor
business.
Of Schaumburg.
Yes, I am, and you are banned from the one block limits of my Schaumburg.
That's funny. All right, we're listening to Straight Arrow, Howard Culver on this broadcast, sponsored by NABISCO. Nabisco is the name to know. They had a lot of singing commercials back then, you know?
They did.
Back in the good old days of radio, I think they figured, well, we'll rhyme, and you know, and then they'll be stuck in their head, and then they'll buy the products.
I think that still works. I mean, those little jingles are everything.
Yeah. T-E-E-L.
How about Pepsodent?
Teal shampoo, right?
Pepsodent.
Yeah, they were all the kind of rhyming and...
J-E-L-L-O. You're good, Carl.
Hey, how's that singing career going for you?
Oh, he's working on it.
You know
it's right
what?
Behind his
I
comedy
just signed
career.
A $20 million contract.
There's something behind all right.
One song. all right.
Well, you keep your radio job.
Yeah, believe me, I will. Even if I signed a $20 million contract, I'd still keep my radio job.
You say that today, but...
But I have been fired from a lot of radio stations over
sure
the years.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
So far, so good here.
That's
but
right. I keep you above water.
There's a lot of time left.
I mean, after a while, it's like,
I think
you're
that's part
here.
Of the radio business,
and I'm
though.
Like, oh, man, really? Come on.
What'd you do?
So I was just getting my sea legs for this thing here. They're like,
gonna,
nope, you're out of here.
I'm going to keep you on the straight and arrow.
Yeah.
Get it?
Stay straight arrow. Oh, wow, ooh. Lisa. She's going to keep me on the straight arrow. I like that. All right, speaking of that, let's get back
to
Straight Arrow.
Their suspicions aroused, Steve and Packy decided to poke around town and see what they could find out. At first, they had no luck.
Steve, we must have been barking up the wrong tree. There ain't nothing wrong.
That Denver gent must have bought that horse.
I denied ever hearing of the Rockin' W, Packy. And why did Burley say a man named Slagle was foreman?
Just talk, Steve.
I got a hunch it's more than that. We've learned what Burley's reputation is since we've been here. It's not good.
Yeah, Kino, it sure ain't. Mighty shady character. But that don't signify, Steve. We'll get the straight of it when the Rockin' W pulls into town.
Oh, pardon me, gentlemen. Did I hear you mention the Rockin' W?
Who are you?
Granger's my name. I'm a cattle buyer. Say, you're not cattle buyers, too, are you?
No, we're not.
Oh, you have cattle for sale, then?
Nope. Just happened into town.
Oh, I see. I haven't been doing well so far. I'm new at this game. But at least there's one herd I'm sure of getting from my packing company. The Rockin' W.
I wouldn't count on it, mister.
I certainly shall. I've practically got an option from the foreman himself. A man named...
Kincaid?
Kincaid? Why, no. His name is Slagle. I met him here in town 2 weeks ago. He said...
Hutty down. Hit the dirt.
My goodness. Gentlemen. You're not hurt.
No. We're all right. Thanks.
These chapel towns, roistering cowboys, shooting off guns. Why, it almost looked as if he shot at you deliberately. But, of course, that's impossible.
Yeah. Did you get a good look at him, Granger?
No. Oh, none at all. And the less I see of any of them, the better. I'm going back to my hotel.
Steve, I got a look at that varmint.
Yeah, it was Denver.
Chino, and it weren't no accident. He tried to gun us down. Steve, what in tarnation's going on?
We'll find the answer out on the trail.
Huh?
Livery stable's right around the corner. Let's saddle up, partner. I want to get a look at the Rockin' W trail herd. A good, close look.
There's the crew sitting around the campfire. We're walking our horses right in.
We got to see their faces close up.
Hold there. Hold there.
Hold up, Packy.
Hold there. Steve, they got the guns out.
Look, Packy, that's not Kincaid and his crew. Every one of them's a stranger.
Yeah, Steve, every last one.
Slagle, say the word and pull trigger.
Did you hear that? Slagle. He called the boss Slagle.
That's all we need to know. Hit leather, Packy. Hit leather. Hey,
shoot!
Lower the saddle, partner. They can't get it.
We're out of range, Steve. What are we going
to
do?
There's only one answer to that. Packy, there's a mystery here. But Burley and Denver know me by sight, so I can't solve it as Steve Adams.
You're heading for Sundown Valley?
Yeah, Packy. For Sundown Valley and the cave of Straight Arrow.
A short distance from the Broken Bow Ranch house lay Sundown Valley, and in it, through a secret entrance known only to Steve Adams and Packy, a vast subterranean cave. The walls of the cave glitter with crystals of gold. From an unknown source comes light that spreads a shimmering gleam everywhere, and standing in the glowing light is a great golden palomino.
Easy there, big horse.
A Comanche bow and Comanche arrows hang on the wall. There is Comanche war paint, Comanche garb. In a moment, Steve Adams' rancher is gone, and in his place...
Yes, Fury, it is I, Straight Arrow.
A clatter of hoofs in the vast golden cave. An Indian war hoof that rings from the glittering rock. Out into the open gallops the great golden palomino, Fury, and riding bareback, clad in Indian garb from head to toe, Straight Arrow on the trail of justice.
I'm with you, Stringer! Get up there, Pete! Come on, Fury!
Leaving Sundown Valley in the hidden cave, Straight Arrow and Packy gallop along the back trail left by the Rockin' W herd. In the moonlight, the red man's keen eyes can read signs that no white man can make out.
Whoa, steady, Fury.
Oh, there, Pete, my boy, whoa.
Yeah,
spotted something, Straight Arrow?
There, glittering in the moonlight. Empty cartridges, Packy.
There was a fight, huh?
The signs are several days old, but they are not difficult to read. Cattle, men ambushed, fighting.
Trail herd moves slow.
couple of days ago, the Rockin' W would have been right around this very spot.
Yes. Here is where the attackers came down into the pass.
Sure they wasn't going up instead of down?
No. The marks of their hoofs show their ponies were heading downhill.
This Slager polecat. Him and his gunslingers, huh?
Yes. Kincaid was attacked. He and his trail crew taken by surprise. Then, Packy, look there.
Huh? Kino. Marching the ground, moving away from the trail.
5, 6 horses. And notice how they go.
Yeah. Looks like 4 of them single file and 2 others off to one side like they held guns on them. You fit the figure that Schlegel sent Kincaid and the others off with a couple of men to guard them?
I am certain of it. The trail leads into the hills where it is easy to hide prisoners. And it will be just as easy to find them. Up, Curry! Hey,
get along there, Pete! Hey.
Several hours later, outside a small cabin in a mountain clearing.
Packy. Inside, there are 4 men tied to chairs and 2 men guarding them.
Yeah, spotted him through the window.
I made no sound to alarm the bad men. Now follow me. Leave Paint and Fury here.
Chino.
We shall charge the door before the bad men know there is anyone within 50 miles of here.
Get them, Packy!
No, you don't, you hermit!
What's going on? It's an engine raid. I can make out by the fire.
No, Kincaid, not a raid. You and your men need not be alarmed. We are your friends.
Friends, that's mighty good news. Red man, we was dry gulched. Polecat named Slagle.
Yes, Kincaid, we already know.
You already know? Say, who are you?
Kincaid, this here is Straight Arrow.
Straight Arrow? Boys, you hear that? We're safe.
Wait, it is not that simple.
Sure it is, Red Man. Untie us, that's all. Then we'll light out after the Rockin' W cattle.
In a few hours, the cattle will be in the loading pens at Longhorn Junction. Slagle and 2 men named Burley and Denver have already arranged to sell them to a buyer named Granger.
Already arranged? But those are Williams' cattle. Whatever they bring belongs to Williams.
Granger does not know Williams. He will buy from Slagle.
Get us free. We gotta get there.
Packy, their horses are outside. Untie these men. Go to Longhorn Junction at once.
Kino.
Do all you can to hold up the sail.
We'll do it. Hey, Straight Arrow, hold on. Where are you going?
Went out the door.
Yeah, Kincaid. Straight Arrow! Straight Arrow!
Was that the Red Man? Where'd he go?
I don't know, Kincaid. Him and Fury just lit out, that's all.
But he said...
Never mind. I don't know where he's heading any more than you. But we ain't got time to powwow. The Rockin' W cattle will be in Longhorn Junction for morning. We gotta make tracks.
Toward noon the next day, the Rockin' W steers were in the loading pens and already counted. And with Burley and Denver standing by, Slagle prepared to take payment from the cattle buyer, Granger.
Well, there you are, Granger. 400 head of prime beef. $10 a head that comes to 4,000. Make sure it's cash.
Yes, yes. Burley here has already told me that Mr. Williams prefers cash.
Williams?
Yes, Slagle, owner of the Rockin' W. Your boss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right, Granger. He likes cash. And so do I.
Slagle, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your dealing with me in preference to any other buyer. I've been very anxious.
Hold on there! You, Granger, wake up!
Hey, what the... Burley, it's that gent from the cafe. Got Kincaid with him.
Button your lip, Denver. We can handle this.
Oh,
Granger, you ain't bought the Rockin' W cattle yet, have you?
Why, no. But what business is it of yours?
Well, it so happens these hombres are trying to cheat you. Those cattle are stolen. Ain't that so, Kincaid?
Mr. Granger, I'm trail boss of the Rockin' W. You want to buy those cattle, you buy them from me.
Huh? You? I'm afraid I don't understand.
Kincaid's my name. This Slagle hombre jumped us. Him and his hired hand.
Jumped you? Where?
I'm telling you, on the trail. While we was kept prisoner, he brought the herd in. Now they're in cahoots to grab off the safe.
I don't understand this. Slagle, I thought you represented the Rocking W.
Granger,
just a minute, Slagle. Let me handle this. Granger, you trust me, don't you?
Why, of course, Burley.
And I suggest you ask this Kincaid gent for proof.
Proof? Proof of what?
That you represent the Rockin' W.
What are you talking about?
Now, young man. Burley's right. Can you prove what you say?
I don't have to prove it. It's true.
There, you see, Granger, a bare-faced attempt to swindle the real representative of the Rock and W out of $4,000 in cash. A confidence game, Granger.
Sure, that's right, Granger. Why, you and me met 2 weeks ago. You knew I was foreman of the Rock and W way back then.
Yes, yes, of course. Burley introduced us. As for you, young man, clear out. Clear out, or I'll have the law on.
Why, you maverick greenhorn, I'm gonna mind
you. No, Packy, no gunplay. It's no use. Nobody in this town knows me. It's our word against theirs. And it won't stand up, young man. No, sir. Slagle brought those cattle in just like he said he would. And I'm going to pay him. I've got gold double eagles here, Slagle. Let me see now. You said 4,000. What in the name of... An arrow. A gold arrow. Knocked my money bag right out of my hand.
Hold steady, Jerry. Slagle, Burley, don't move any of you.
That's straight, Arrow. We're right glad you showed up. But it won't do a particle of good.
That's right, Red Man. This stubborn idiot won't believe me without proof. I don't have any proof.
Kincaid, I brought the proof with me.
Eh? What's that? What are you talking about, Red Man? Proof that Kincaid represents the Rocking W?
Here, read this.
A letter.
Yes, Burley. Fury and I rode many miles to bring it here. A letter from Williams, the owner of the Rocking W. Read it, Granger.
Why? According to this, Kincaid is the foreman. It gives him complete authority to sell. And it's signed Williams.
Why, that's a forgery. Anybody can write a letter.
Williams wrote that letter, Burley.
But
the people in this town may not know Kincaid, but they know Williams.
Well,
and they have seen his signature many times.
Burley, Denver, we're licked. Go for your gun.
No, you do not. Packy!
No. Don't shoot. All right, Red Man, you got us. We give up. Don't
drop
shoot.
Your guns, all of you.
Yeah, I'll drive.
Kincaid, get the sheriff. And once these men are in jail, you can sell the Rocking W cattle and take the cash back where it belongs, to Williams and to nobody else.
Red Man, I sure for certain will. I don't know who'll be more grateful, me or old man Williams. Yeah, I should have known. It takes more than a bunch of slick crooks to beat out Straight Arrow.
Adventures of the Old West. Ride with Straight Arrow. And remember, Nabisco, Nabisco is the name to know. For a breakfast you can't beat, eat Nabisco shredded wheat. Listen again next week, same time, same station, for another adventure with Straight Arrow. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You know, that guy was a real straight arrow, that guy, you know?
Oh, you took my joke, Carl.
You don't hear that one anymore, you know, too often. Hey, you don't hear that phrase very often anymore. He was a real straight arrow, that
well,
guy.
Well, it's,
you know?
You keep him on the straight and narrow. Maybe
yeah.
It came from Straight Arrow. Who knows?
He's a real straight arrow.
Could have evolved
arrow.
That way.
Nabisco. Nabisco is the
name to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
Crooked Trail, July 18th, 1949. Howard Culver starring in that. Hope you enjoyed that.